So wonderful. Okay, we've been covering some deep subjects, and I hope they've been relevant. They're very deep subjects, and therefore I've written a book, Waves of Devotion, where it's described a little bit more detailed. I'm trying. I have a questionnaire that we're going to fill out at the end. And I wrote, thank you deeply for your participation in the Nectar of Devotion seminar. In many ways, it was one of the most rewarding courses I've ever taught, and in ways also challenging. The challenge was putting such a substantial and deep amount of text in just relatively short weekly classes to audiences who, for the most part, are new. I plan on teaching every spring at the Bhakti Center. I need your honest feedback. Will you please answer the questionnaire? So, as people know, I was formerly a coach, so I'm always in a world of strategy, and I apply it to teaching, you know, and so my strategy is to really give a thorough overview of all the main subjects, and if there's anything I didn't cover in depth, you have, you know, to study, or I have a study guide that you can study with yourself. Okay, and sometimes I write the Sanskrit in the notes, and I think that just indicates what verses, if you really want to learn, are really substantial verses. And it's also good for me to, when I teach them, to look at the meaning. Now, we're going to go back to chapter 13 and 14. And if you remember, it described all the items of devotional service. They're also called anga. Does anyone know what anga means?
Limbs.
So they're the limbs of the body of devotional service. They have how you practice devotional service. And then there was a part we didn't get at the end of on chapter 14, devotional qualifications. What is an anga of bhakti? For example, there are different spiritual things like van ashram. One is a grihastha, a brahmachari, a sannyasi. One is a brahmana, he's a teacher, administrator. You know, what's the relationship with these things and bhakti? Are they limbs of bhakti? Another thing that was really discussed that was really important was jnana and vairagya. Discipline, cultivation of knowledge. Knowledge means not necessarily bhakti, but you're not the body. The kind of stuff we study sometimes in the Yoga Sutras. So, you know, Rupa Goswami, this is like the guidebook. So he makes really clear, you know, what is bhakti? So that when you approach the world and you approach things, your definition of bhakti is not so narrow that you exclude things that should be devotional service. Or it's not so broad that you include things, you know, as devotional service. So he's a very wonderful scholar in that way. So in a very, very important thing is jnana. And when they mention jnana, they mean the path of jnana of detaching yourself from the body by analytical knowledge. And that it distinguishes the body from the soul, and also by discipline. Welcome, please come in, join. And, okay, Lisa's here too, that's wonderful. Come on in, Lisa. We'll keep everyone up. We had a long kirtan, so you didn't miss much. We actually just started. So I'm going to share something with you all, and then I'm going to get back to the subject, okay? You know, bhakti is meant to be applied in the world. It's called jnana chakshus. that you see through knowledge. And when you see through knowledge, then you can actually transform your consciousness. So you always try to see bhakti in the world. Even there's a story in the Bhagavatam of one saint who had 24 gurus. You know, he learned loyalty from the dog and, you know, different things you can learn in the world. So last weekend after this program, I went down there, and then Kadamba Mala and her wonderful daughter Madhavi, they drove me to my mother's house. She lives in New Jersey. She's 94 years old. And I'm visiting, you know, my mother. Happened to be Mother's Day. It was just a coincidence. And she's 94, and I had like a realization. She's so sweet. But what I realized is, and it's something in terms of bhakti I think that's so important to cultivate, is, you know, my mother was a very strong lady. She was very beautiful. You see pictures when she was young. You know, in 70 years, she hasn't gained 1 pound. And eats whatever she... And she was also an artist. She's still a fantastic artist. I mean, really talented. And she met my father. They were she was an actress, acting, and then in community things, she would star, direct, and produce, you know, different things. And then, you know, when the children grew older, she opened her own business in New York, a ladies' boutique that became very, very successful. My father was able to kind of retire. So what I noticed is all those faculties that she had that give you ability to control the world kind of about a couple of years ago really went. She was driving a car until the age of 91. And then they kind of went. And what happens is you become so much more dependent. You know, and dependency means humility. You become so much more dependent. You become so much more humble. And love increases. And you become more attractive, actually. So, and I'm relating this to bhakti and our lives and how God deals with us in the world. And then, I don't know if you know, there was a lady that came, but she works on Saturdays. She couldn't come. Her name is Radhika. And her mother is also in her 90s, and she comes to the Bhakti Center from Brooklyn by herself by train. And if you ever meet her, she's the sweetest lady. So this is really in ourselves what bhakti is. It's that kind of consciousness, you know, that I'm dependent on something, I'm connected to something greater than myself. And in an ordinary way, you know, it just happens in life. This is the blessings of the difficulties we have. This is the blessings of old age and things. They don't make us dependent. They make us realize our dependence. And that's the consciousness of bhakti that allows you, Krishna Anushilanam, to do activities that follow a will higher than your own. And I gave seminars on this, and it has nothing to do with low self-esteem. It actually gives you an inner core confidence, actually. It's actually the most secure position is when your head is bowed down and your hands are folded, and you feel that shelter. When you're depending on your own, you're always in anxiety because it's a very temporary thing. But when you actually have that kind of shelter and you actually feel it. So now my younger brother, he's the person in the family that takes care of my mother. And she's so sweet and dependent on him. Where before she used to be so upset with him. You know, and controlling him and, you know. So I noticed that, and I think that's really what bhakti means. It's getting that core feeling in your hearts. Now, going back to where we were, we're in a section, we're going back, all the angas, the limbs of bhakti, are described. And now Rupa Goswami is going to describe what is the relationship between jnana, renunciation. Is that it's a spiritual quality. Is renunciation bhakti? Is your social duties bhakti? It even discusses a very much thing about wealth and using it in devotional service. Is that bhakti? So he describes this, and it's a very, very important thing. And he describes how jnana, it can help you to enter bhakti, because we're so attached to the world and so many things, we're so absorbed. So a little, you know, renunciation is good in there. I was staying with my friend Professor Bryant when he was writing the Yoga Sutras. He's a friend of mine, very close, for maybe 30 something years. When he became a Krishna Bhakta, I was already in the ashram as a monk, and he came. Well, from that time so I was studying. I would get the transcripts that he would write before he wrote them, and he wrote the Yoga Sutras, which is jnana. And I was reading it, and even it was like kind of helpful. But the point is, it's not bhakti. It's not bhakti. Just cultivating, it's not bhakti. And there's a danger in it. And the danger in it is jnana, or renunciation, which is also called, which is when you have the path of jnana, of trying to understand you're not the body and understand deeply the soul and you're not these things, the practice is vairagya. Vairagya means without attachment. It's militant shunning of the world. And although in the beginning that's helpful, if you continue like that, what happens is it closes the heart. Because what it's doing, it's no, 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 no. But bhakti is what I was saying before. It's exactly opposite. It's a very soft heart. So Rupa Goswami says, well, how to become detached without hardening the heart? Because if you're just absorbed, we see people that have no control over their senses. They're just absorbed in everything. And even people who come to Krishna consciousness, if they're too attached to so many things and indulgent in habits. So you need to practice. So how do you do it in bhakti without hardening the heart? And he quotes this verse, which is very, very wonderful verse. And what the verse says, very, very famous verse, anasaktasya vishayan yatahan upayanjita. So things should be utilized, properly utilized. The sense object should be properly utilized without attachment. So you don't give up. They should be properly utilized. And you should be persistently relating everything to Krishna. This is called yukta vairagya, or balanced detachment. You give up things which you cannot use for your relationship with God. You see, if I was a Mayavadi impersonalist sannyasi, I wouldn't be telling jokes up here. But I, no, really. Because it would be no, no, no. But I'm not, why should I give that up? It's so good for my desire to be a stand-up comedian. Why should I renounce that when it could be so well used in Krishna's service? No, but whatever you do, Megan was an actress, so and she, you know, has speaking. So why shouldn't she learn verses and use this? Julie is a dancer. Why shouldn't she use that? So what we can, and some things we have need. I remember we had this wedding, and we used to just have 26 Second Avenue. So this girl was getting married, and she was kind of like, I don't know, she had a lot of, like a Jnana Vairagya type. She was a little kind of, you know, detached, and you know, she's mad. And she was getting married. I remember, too, her husband had the tattoos. And I remember when he had to put the thing on her head, you know, and his charter went up, and his tattoo is there, I defy you, like that. But the lady, a very senior lady that was there, she didn't want to dress up. You know, he said, no, you must look beautiful for Krishna. You must look beautiful on your wedding day. So you give up the things that cannot be used in Krishna's service. And what happens then is the heart is exercised and kept soft for bhakti, but at the same time, you're practicing renunciation. So you're not indulgent in the world and being, you know, disturbed and distracted. We have somewhere up here, there's another mat for you. Yeah, or sit on a chair there somewhere. Yeah, here we go. Right here, Clarissa. Okay, good. You're late. You're losing points. No, I'm joking. Okay. Things should be accepted. And I always tell that story where I just went to this very famous saint in Vrindavan. And I don't know why. I live so simply in Vrindavan. I didn't have a penny in my pocket. I couldn't even buy a cold drink. We lived like such monks. No money, nothing. You know, even if we go to Delhi, we go by bus. If we travel around in Delhi by bus, it was very, it's the way, we didn't, there wasn't money like there was now. So simple. And then I remember it was a whole story that these people took over the project and they were kind of militaristic and they wanted uniforms. So they gave me a Samsonite briefcase. They gave me Birkenstock shoes and they gave me a Rolex watch. So I went to this, I was going visiting this saint and, you know, I would go to him and ask philosophical questions. I said, what is this yukta vairagya, balanced detachment? And he looked at me and he said, well, like you need a watch, 100 rupees. And I remember my hand kind of went. Okay, but it's a very, very important point in Krishna consciousness. And if you do this, you actually become very, very renounced. It's so nice. You know, some of the kirtaneers are going to come up here, you know, today for the kirtan. You know, especially those people in the Radha Govinda Mandir, Achyutan, Anantan, etc. You know, they're, you know, Yukta Vairagya. They're themselves. They're musicians. They have personalities. They have families. So they don't give up things that can be attached to Krishna, but they live a very simple and renounced life of devotion and surrender. Okay? It's a good principle. Next verse, while I'm in the mood. Yeah, and this is called false renunciation in bhakti, is when prityaga, when you abandon vastuna, things that hari sambandha, you learn a little sambandha's relationship. When you abandon things, vastu shastra, when you abandon things that have this relationship to Krishna, considering them to be material. When you abandon those things, thinking they're material, by those who desire liberation, impersonal liberation, that is called not yukta vairagya, but falgu vairagya. Falgu is false renunciation. And this will be detrimental to bhakti. But, you know, this principle can also be absorbed. I remember this one, this one guru, and he thought yukta vairagya, and he was getting so much opulence and so many things, and he would walk into Tiffany's and wouldn't even look at the price. The best in the house for Radha Govinda, you know? And so much, and it became personal that one other person sung a song about him. You want to hear it? Okay. Okay. Rubies, diamonds, rings, and pearls just attract fools to the spiritual world. Dashing, handsome, and carefree. Such and such Goswami. And that was sung by another monk who was a folk singer. So that was yukta vairagya. Okay. Good. Any questions? Yeah, Alexander.
So are they like things that he's speaking of?
Yeah.
Are we speaking of like a feather, a tray, specific things used in devotional worship, or?
Well, I give an example. Like, it's like, you know, a nature of a lady, especially, you know, with clothes and dress and, you know what I'm saying? That makes them feel good about themselves, a certain psychological health in that type of thing. If they have that nature, some people, you know, most ladies do have that nature. So it means don't give them up. Don't come and now I just have to wear, you know, like monk's clothes or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So in that sense, to look nice, to present yourself in Krishna consciousness, et cetera, like that. But it may not be, you know, you have, what is that? You know, the 700 pairs of shoes. Not more than 50.
Yeah. Things that perhaps are rejected unbeknownst to someone that's used for.
Well, someone may reject family life. When they actually need a family that can be raised, in other words, you have an attachment, but it can be raised in Krishna's service. Again, Anantana Chuta, Adi Dev and his wife, and they produce a whole generation of pure devotees. So that may have been an attachment that they had. We want family, you know, and whatever goes along with that. But if you falsely reject that, you know, that won't be good for your bhakti. So everything in bhakti ultimately takes sincerity, actually. You know, but it's a very important principle. And sometimes people get confused. You know, it's the tendency is always to think that spiritual life means renunciation. But spiritual life means dedication. And in that mood of dedication, there's so much renunciation. So many things you have to give up that can't be used in Krishna's service. But this way, you can keep yourself emotionally healthy and a soft heart for the process of bhakti. Yes, Marilee?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
So, one thing that you said is that, you know, is that sometimes people have some attachments, but they can use those attachments in Krishna service.
Yeah.
And also, here in the previous verse that you said,
yeah,
it says, if one accepts something without attachment, how is it that, you know, like, one can accept something without attachment when one is accepting it because one is attached to it already?
Well, yeah, I think you can have things that you're attached to and then do it in a mood of service to Krishna. You know, it's a difference between enjoying something and taking what you need. You can take something what you need, right? And you take what you need. What's that verse? There's a famous verse on that. Do you know that, Megan? You don't know that verse. 50% of your life is there. What is that verse? It's I can't forget it. What is it? Kamesya nendriya pritir labho jivete yavata. Kamesya, don't take it for the objective or goal of sense gratification. Take it for the objective or goal of serving Krishna. But you may have attachment. So that's without attachment. Otherwise, if you don't have attachment for it at all, then why keep it sometimes? So the things that you can use, and the things that you can use, you may have attachment for, you may have detachment for, but they can be used in Krishna's service. So how do you do without attachment? You're really dedicated to Krishna, to Guru, to service. Okay? It's a very interesting point. We'll go on. I'm watching, you know, how to... Interesting. Wealth in bhakti, and there's something in Nectar Devotion about that that's really interesting. I think I'll read it. Is, you know, you can have you can be a guru and have many followers and then tell the followers, you know, serve Krishna, and then you think that their service is yours and your own devotion becomes weakened. And you can do the same thing with wealth or money. You know, here's so much money for the deity worship. And then that's your devotion. But then if you think that the whole deity worship, you know, I'm doing deity worship because, you know, I gave so much money and Vasudev's doing a big puja and everything. And there's a big worship of the deities and I paid for all the boga and everything. That's not, your devotion can become slack. So Rupa Goswami says, be careful in that way. You know, your devotion is your devotion, not the people and money you do things through. Although it may be devotional to give money. It may be devotional to instruct people. So that's there, because I feel, you know, there's so much to cover, you could read it. But on page 116, maybe I will read it. It's just, the spiritual master must never be carried away by an accumulation of wealth or large number of followers. A bona fide spiritual master will never become like that. But sometimes, if a spiritual master is not properly authorized and only on his own initiative becomes a spiritual master, he may be carried away by accumulation of wealth and a large number of disciples. His is not a very high grade of devotional service. If a person is carried away by such achievements, then his devotional service becomes slackened. So it can become slackened. It can become less in that consciousness. So Rupa Goswami, it's really the handbook of devotional service. And then yamas and bhakti. They come automatically with devotional service. If you really are a devotee, you will become nonviolent. You know, it's not... Ahimsa in itself is not bhakti. A devotee does become nonviolent. And if you are violent, it's going to hurt your devotional service. But, you know, celibacy or any of the... It's not devotion in itself. Devotion will come automatically. The discipline and all these things will come automatically by one who is so fixed in devotional service. And it'll come in a natural way. Okay, I'm just reviewing what we did before. And there's two ways to practice to perfection. Remember, it mentioned ek anga, again, the name anga, limb, by one practice. Or an ek anga, by many devotional practices. And there was verses in the Nectar Devotion, if you want to read about, there's nine main practices, and there were exemplars for each practice. Shravanam, by hearing Maharaj Prickett listen for 7 days. That was his only devotional service. And Sukadeva Goswami spoke for 7 days. So there's Shravanam Kirtan, Vishnu Smaranam. Prahlad was always meditating. So you can do many or one, etc. And that's so beautiful about devotion that you can really move according to your taste. Gail only does Shravan. She only hears. So it's authorized. We just got to get around the other technicalities. But it's authorized. She hears about everything. She goes to so many classes. It's amazing. Okay, go on. And what is Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti? We discussed this, and again, this is always a difficult subject because I'm sometimes afraid to start it because, you know, it takes a lot of depth to understand, really. But I'll read this quote, and then I'll explain it. When an advanced devotee realized, hears about the affairs of the devotees of Vrindavan and the mellows of, these are the relationships with Krishna, Sakya's friendship, Vatsalya, Mother Yasoda, he becomes inclined in one of these ways and his intelligence becomes attracted. Indeed, he begins to covet that particular type of devotion. When such consciousness is awakened, one's intelligence no longer depends on the instructions of Shastra or on logic and argument. And that's the main symptom. And so basically, I thought the way I can describe this, what it looks like when someone has this and what it looks like when it's artificial. So first have it, a person comes to Krishna consciousness and he's hearing in the stories of Krishna. And he's, you know, and the thing is, you know, it can come really at any time because you don't know how a person in his last life had this, what's called samskara. But generally what will happen is, it's not an absolute that at a particular stage this will come, but it really won't come really unless you are really seriously hearing and chanting about Krishna. And then by hearing these stories of Krishna in the Bhagavatam and going to Vrindavan and here, then something very, very real may come into your heart. That's what I want. I really want to serve Krishna. I really want to be Krishna's mother. I really want to be Krishna's friend. I want to be a lover of Krishna. And it was made very, very clear before that, you know, especially with the romantic sentiments of Krishna, it has a form of lust, but the consciousness has nothing to do with it. The consciousness, and unless you have some sense of that, unless you have an experience of that, you'll probably misunderstand Krishna's relationship to the gopis to be something like your own. And it gave quotes, and read really what Prabhupada said about that in Nectar of Devotion, that even great scholars, you know, they had these aspirations. And even great monks, that in that strict Indian culture before, the sannyasis, they wouldn't even hear a lady singing. But they were constantly hearing about the gopis because it was the purest devotional surrender and love. So what will happen is, by some mercy, you'll be hearing these, and then this will become into your heart, and it's called lobha. Lobha means greed. You'll want it. And it's not defined by I should or logic or argument or something. And the example would be when you know, let's say someone's a father, and they have a daughter, and the daughter falls in love with a person. The father can't say to the daughter, you should not love this person. They can say, you should not be with this person, or don't love her. Or it's not going to be on the basis of their logic or intellect. Or they may say you shouldn't be, or it could be broken up, but you can't tell the person they don't love. So it'll be so strong in your heart that it'll be, and then what will happen is you'll cultivate it. And the way you'll cultivate it is, and the inspiration for everything you'll do, it's kind of like if someone's dealing with like they like a king, right? And they love the king. Then when they're with the king, the service is dealt with by a lot of rules, right? This is how you act towards the king, and this is how you move towards the king, right? And this is how you serve the king, and don't do this, and don't do that. And that's your relationship, and that's your love for the king. You don't want to. I tell this story that You know, when I grew up here and we had a nice house in Brooklyn, and then the bedroom's upstairs, and you go down the stairs, and my father was, you know, sitting in the father's chair that they all have, those kind of things that come there. And I had, I don't know if I was misbehaved or whatever. So I walked by, and I did have a lot of respect for my father. I really did. I think he was a wonderful person. And he had a little formality, which is good in that relationship. So I walked downstairs, and I walked in, and I said, his name was Walter, and he was a Mason, so his formal name was Worshipable Walter Winokur. You know, they had like the dots and everything, you know, the Masons. And then I walked in, and I say, how you doing, Wally? And he'd say, I am not your friend. I am your father. I said, okay, Wally. You see, the proper love for the father, right? And if you have that relationship, you relish that relationship. It is the respect. It is the rules and how you do things. But if it's your friend, you know, it is no rules. So that's what, so you have that sense of Krishna, and it's a very intimate relationship with Krishna, and it's guided by that. And then when it comes, then you cultivate it, and the way you cultivate it is you worship a deity of the form of the object of love, like in Madhurya, it's Radha Krishna, in the romantic, and, you know, Vatsalya, it may be a baby Krishna, this deity's a baby Krishna, and Sakya, Krishna Balaram become your deities, and then you're hearing particular things, and you start to hear about, and you become attracted to a devotee who's serving Krishna in the way that you want. And then you begin to read, and you begin to hear about it, and you begin to sing songs about it, and therefore Rupa Goswami was one of the main persons. He wrote so many books and so many poems and so many dramas for people who had this feeling to cultivate it. And then people who are cultivating that, there's different practices that came over the years and things, how to meditate on that. It was very much something of smaran, which means remembrance. But the main process was the smaran should come from kirtan. And the kirtan of someone who's aspiring for that, it would go in a natural progression. First, you'd be hearing the name. And then as your devotion and your love increases, then the form would come when you chant the name. And then as you continue, the qualities would come. And then finally, the pastimes. And as you're chanting the names, there would be like, a movie of Krishna in your mind, really. But, you know, you don't come to this unless you study the sacred texts that deal with this. And you can't practice it unless you do it. So it could come at any time. And one who's artificial, they'll do this for ego. I now am the most advanced devotee because I have this relationship with Krishna. You know, I'm a rasika bhakta. Rasika means, you know, relishing bhakta. And worse than that, when you meditate, you start meditating on Radha and Krishna, your experience with those forms is just sex life. So it can even increase your material desires. You know, and then you artificially go to that platform. So, and there's many, many technicalities on that, but that's just the basic kind of summary of it, how it kind of works. And, you know, being in Vrindavan, which is the seat of this, I'm very familiar with people and even people who legitimately are in very high levels of this. And they study all the ghosts, and not artificial, and they don't announce it publicly for ego. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, he understood that if ego comes into any of your practices, you don't get past first base. So he saw that people would take these things, that I'm advanced, you know, and that kind of mood. And he would always like that people would keep these things very high and very reverent and very respectful. Because once you lose the mood of devotion, the mood of humility, the mood of dependence. And I always say this, you know, the false ego, the conception to be the center, can grab anything and use it in its own service. Even Krishna consciousness. I'm an advanced devotee. But at the same time, you see when you do come to Vrindavan, and you know, a natural sentiment and a natural love for Vrindavan comes into your heart. You know, and then, anyway, it's a very beautiful thing. We are in this line, and by practicing Krishna consciousness and reading the books and studying this book, you know, we get ample opportunity to actually hear about Krishna and Krishna, the relationship of Krishna's devotees. And if we do it in the proper way and cultivate humility and surrender to Guru and Krishna, then we open our hearts for this experience to come in. Questions? Yes, Matthew.
So, as you just said, since Prabhupada gave us Radha and Krishna, since early, even in the first few pages of Bhagavad Gita, you learn about the five rasas.
Right.
So, does that mean that necessarily Raga Muga Bhakti is our aspirational goal?
It is.
And so, it's not really, just to clarify, because you just used the word experience, but I mean, it's the ultimate experience, right? That we're all...
Different people have different relations. You can have a relationship with Krishna, with God, you know, in awe and reverence and majesty. You will become spontaneous in your devotion, you know what I'm saying? But when you deal with a superior, there's an element of rule-based, you know? And it's not that a person, when he becomes advanced, he doesn't follow the rules. So that's not really, you can't like, oh, now he's not following. It's just that's not his guidance. That's not his inspiration. And when you worship God in majesty, very much, you know, what's the right thing? What's the proper thing? How to do it? Enters in. But even someone what's called Vaidhi Bhakti, when they progress and advance in devotion, they become spontaneous, right? And they go through all the stages, you know, up to bhava and prema, you know, but their objective is God and majesty and opulence. And, you know, I guess we say like that, you know, people have that pure relationship. I guess how can I explain in the local vernacular? I should only be so lucky. You know, it's not like a minor thing. But this is what Lord Chaitanya in our tradition came to give. And very matter of fact, when you enter in, all the things we do really are to inspire this. You know, and even, it's all to inspire this type of feeling. And it almost is a sense that the souls that have this sense are somehow, it's like a magnet, they're somehow drawn or karmically collected in this type of setting. But the real key is when you study these things under Prabhupada and his followers, it's couched in an understanding to prevent you from abusing it. But at the same sense, one time someone tell Prabhupada, should we chant the name of the gopis? You know, what was it? Prabhupada said, we didn't ban the gopis. Chaitanya Charitamrita is all about this. Even it says Lord Chaitanya came for this. Even Krishna came for this. Anyway, anyone who wants to discuss this more, I'm open, Matthew. We can discuss it even personally sometime. When I'm here for the summer, you know, through October, and it could be a whole class for so many classes on what this is. And even when I was studying it, just to put my mind how to explain this in an appropriate way so people understand it and not shy away from this, you know, but at the same time, not jump to this. Okay, Julie, one more question. Okay.
Well, I'm just going to say to what Matthew was saying, it made me think of when a musician gets so good that they're able to improvise, and a really good musician still follows the rules, they still warm up and do the scales, but there's that time a musician maybe just throws away the actual written notes and then they can groove, and that sort of just was making me think of Robin.
I think you should sit up here and give a class. I think you have such nice realizations. Thank you for that, Julie. Okay? I'm going to go 10 more minutes and take our break, and then we'll cover today's subject matter, which is bhava and prem. In fact, why don't we start that? But Ruti, can you go to we're going to go toward the end of it, where it has that verse, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. It's about maybe the third plane from the end. It's the very end of the chapter, but can you skip to that? Is that possible? That you did. So the goal is what's called prema. And we're going to discuss the definitions of bhava and prema. But prema is when the love for Krishna becomes so intense that there's nothing in the consciousness. You even forget yourself. And when they describe when Radha and Krishna are in love, they merge, but not, they don't merge in it, that they become the same person, but they forget their own identities. The love is so strong, you don't even think about yourself. So I'm skipping to the end, but at the very end, what happens is, he says, this is the best way to achieve it. And this is a very significant verse. It's a very significant verse because tells it from the very beginning. So adau means the beginning is shraddha. So it all becomes with faith. Faith in what? Faith that the highest sublimity is to give myself to God and to serve Krishna. That's a big thing. I know before I came to Krishna consciousness or this particular spiritual line I thought the sublimity was to put myself in the center of the world, accrue power by education or whatever things I can do, sports, whatever it was, knowledge, and move the world around to, you know, satisfy my desires. So it begins with this, and this is what comes from a devotee. It comes from the heart of a devotee. Somehow it enters into your heart, and it's an experience, actually. It's a spiritual experience. And that experience gives you the conception that this is the highest thing and that this is what I want. So adau shraddha, and then tata sadhu sangha. Then you associate with devotees. You say, well, okay, wait, this is kind of nice, right? This is kind of nice. It's so good. Let me be with those people who do it. This is how the process works. Who want that love of Krishna, who are aspiring for this. And then one practices bhajana kriya to do bhajan. Then, it's so good, I will adopt the practices to get it, which is what we're studying now. Lisa, I love that charter. It has so much history, right?
I had Bryn have one, I had to get my own.
This is the charter worn in Vrindavan by the highest order of renunciates. It's a whole story. We'll tell that story later, but it just invokes so much Vrindavan in me. Okay, bhajana kriya, right? Bhajana kriya. Then it's so good, I'm going to practice it. Here's the hard part now. Then, tato narta navritti syat. Anarta navritti. Navritti means to give up anartas. And what are anartas? Arta means what? Wealth. Anarta means that which doesn't have value or wealth to this. you start giving that up. That's the next stage. These things don't have value to us. And that's why we're discussing yukta vairagya and what do you give up? What don't you give up? And then tato nishta. These are all... Ooh. Okay, anyway. Tato nishta, then you become fixed. It's so good, I do it all the time. It's so good, I'm fixed in it. I do it all the time. Right? And you see, right? There are devotees that are fixed. They've come to that stage. It's a gradual process. Then ruchi. And ruchi means... I'm going to pull up my notes. I know what it means, but I got it good. Ruchi definitely means taste. You really get a taste when you're fixed. Oh, here it is. Oh, it's at the end. Excuse me. One second. You really get a taste when you're fixed. Okay. And I gave an analogy. When you're fixed, how you get taste. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Rasaham apso konteya, I am the taste of water. And I just try to figure that out. And I realized that when I was in the Himalayas and I was drinking the water coming out of the Himalayas, in Rishikesh, before it went down the plane. Because when it gets down the plane, it starts to mix with minerals and different things. And it's really tasty. So water is tasty when it's just water. And bhakti becomes real tasty when it's just bhakti. That's why when you sometimes go on a retreat, right, where it's just bhakti, you really get a taste. Isn't it, Saibel? Right, Lisa? It was just bhakti, right? Tremendous feeling, right? When you're fixed, then you get... But this ruchi is still with the intellect. You still... Yes, I should serve Krishna. You're fixed, your taste, your desire is still... when the mind goes away, then you're naturally saying, oh, yes, let me bring it back to Krishna. It's just ruchi. Then I didn't put the rest of the Sanskrit verse. And then it says asakti. And asakti means, it says, then you develop, it says deep attachment. So a taste, ruchi, deep attachment. It means spontaneous, without the intellect. Your mind cannot move from devotion. Even if it goes away, you don't have to say, get it back. You're just attracted. You're just attracted. Again, like a young boy is attracted to a young girl. And then, something distracts him, but he doesn't have to think, I should. No, it's like, whew. So it becomes attracted. And then, and this is why I did this verse, then devotional ecstasy, bhava, and love of Godhead develops. So when it's described, when you reach the stage of ashakti, that what happens is with that spontaneous love, it's almost like the voice in your heart is, I want to serve God. And if we look in our hearts now, there's so many other desires, including, why has he done that to me? I want this, this, so many voices. But when the voice in the heart for bhakti becomes so loud and it's so spontaneous and so consuming, then bhava. And bhava means, and then we'll get to that definition, and bhava means shuddha sattva visheshatma. There's a potency of God that comes to your heart. You attract God's energy of love that awakens the natural nature of love in your heart. And then your mind becomes so imbued with love. It's like an iron rod in fire. Your mind is in love. Love is just permeates. And love of what? Love of Krishna. And love of Krishna in a particular relationship with Krishna, who becomes your friend or your lover. And So, and then when that matures, and we're going to discuss this, when that matures, love of Godhead develops. And that's prema. And the difference between this and prema is like the sun rays and the sun. Bhava is called prema ankur. Ankur is, Nikki, it sprouts. Like the sprout, right, is it called ankur. She gives me every week mung bean sprouts. And it's a sprout. And it's a sprout of what? Of this. And then it matures fully. So after the break, we'll take just a short break. I think 5 minutes. Okay, about a 10-minute break. We'll take a short break. And when you hear Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, you better be sitting. okay. Oh, excuse me, I just said it. I just lost it.
Okay. That was a soccer coach.
No, that wasn't a soccer coach. That was my comedic sense of timing. It's different. Okay. All right. Okay. We'll take a short break. No, before the break, I'll say something. The next 2 weeks, there's no classes. That's part of the schedule. On Monday, I leave for South America for 2 weeks. A nice program there. Have a nice ashram that I'm helping to direct. And then on the 7th, I think if it's the 6th or the 7th. I think it's the 6th. The 6th, we will... have at least the last official class, and I'm going to discuss the rasa theory, which is the last three waves, and just show you really, it's so beautiful how this theory works. And then we're going to show you how it works in terms of pastimes of Krishna. And we're going to do a drama. And I do the drama with Megan. And she does it really nicely, and I have my part. Don't miss the drama, I can tell you this. Bring your tissues, not just for me. It will bring tears. It'd be a beautiful drama about Krishna. It's really an amazing thing. Many of you have seen it, but when you see it, we're going to do it. And then finally, we'll actually get it filmed properly, which I always wanted. So we'll do that. Okay, 5:30, we're going to take a little break, and then it's going to be interesting. We're going to have the definitions of everything. Okay, so I'll tell you what our schedule is here. I told you, I made a questionnaire. I told you that at the beginning. I really need feedback to, first of all, improve the class and also see how we can go forward and who wants to go forward in different ways. I think we have such a nice little community here. You know, after a while, you know, the people that are coming regularly. And it's so nice it because community and spiritual life and everything means center. So it's centered on a certain text, a certain objective, you know, and then there's a kind of nice unity. Now, so I'm going to go as much as I can. And then next week, if what I don't finish, I'll finish at the beginning. And then basically show you the structure of the rest of the Nectar of Devotion and explain to you how you can understand. It's beautiful. I mean, one section has the 64 transcendental qualities of Krishna with its different things and how these loving sentiments are developed and how when you read the Krishna stories, you can see. But anyway, okay, now you remember we said when you become so one-pointed in your devotion, and it's so spontaneous and hankering, then you may get what's called bhava. And that's really when you really understand really deeply and feel what is your relationship with God. And relationship means, you know, you're a friend or a lover or a servant, or you understand that. And somehow or other, it's something, shuddha sattva means pure goodness. It's not material. Visheshatma, it means there's a certain energy of God. There's a certain energy of God that just comes into your heart And it's a moment, actually. And I once listened to this tape. It's very, I visited a friend in Vrindavan, and he has a farm in Vrindavan. And it's an amazing person. He lives off the land, and he has the most beautiful, he loves the cows. And he was the servant of a very advanced Vaishnava for many years. So I came in and he said, would you like to hear this lecture by my guru? And I said, oh yeah, wow, good. So he puts on the video and the title is called Ujvala Nilamani. Now, I'll explain it to you yesterday, but in the Western Division, in the fifth wave, it's a discussion of Madhurya Ras and what are the bhavas, what are the different emotional components of that. And it's very short. Even that's the main thing that Rupa Goswami came to give, because he wrote a whole book on that. And that book is called Ujvala Nilamani. So my hands went like this. Wow. Yeah, the higher stuff. I'm ready. So it's this old sadhu, and he goes, Ujvala Nilamani, I have never read the book. But then he begins to describe, he's speaking in English, an experience he has. Now, because I've studied the text, I know what the Sanskrit terms are for the English, he says. And he's a very humble soul, but he describes when this happened to him. And then he said, it was very beautiful. He said, and then there was a descent of divine knowledge. Now, divine knowledge, it's actually, Divyagyan means divine consciousness. So actually it came to him and he was describing it. And then he said, what did he say? I was captured. And then he described, I was the seen. I was the seer. Now I became the seen. The seer means I was in the center, right? Now something else is in the center and I'm the object. No, he said, I was the subject. He said, but now I've become the object. I've become captured. So there's a descent of divine consciousness, love. And love means you're controlled. When you have love, you're controlled. If you really, and if it's divine love, you're completely controlled. I was captured. So you're kind of moving according to the desires of God. Willingly, and you're just immersed in that love. You're following. You're in love. So, Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma, transcendental pure good, which is a ray of the sun of Prem. So that love of Godhead, Prem Ankur, it's begin to sprout. So the difference between the sun and the sun rays. What's the difference? Laxity and density. So you have love of Godhead, and it's overwhelming, but it's still laxity rather than density, and which softens the heart. Your heart becomes completely melted, and I think that's what this word means, chitta. Your heart becomes, I think this means melted, your heart becomes melted by these kind of tastes, completely melted. And what is the taste? What are the desires? Next verse. The desire, this is it, the desire to achieve Krishna, to be with Krishna, to meet Krishna. I want to be with Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. And I want a very close relationship with Krishna. Isn't this what love of God is? You want to be with the object of your beloved? You want to be with the object of your beloved. You want to serve them. And you're close at heart. And your heart just becomes so soft. This is all you want to do is love. And you're completely dependent on that love. Completely dependent on that love. right? Like I described, that's my mother, right? Now, it just, this is, you're dependent from outside you. Everything you want is not under your control. You just have to, and you're getting it. And you're feeling so overwhelmed with gratitude and humility. Three kinds of devotional desires. Okay, and we're going to go quickly now because to cover everything. And it's possible in two ways. One is by practice. The other is by the special mercy of Krishna or pure devotee. This is rare. Prabhupada described it like getting an honorary degree in college. You know, you didn't go through the grades, but they say, you know, whatever it is, you get your doctorate, and you didn't do anything. And Prabhupada said, it's a fool that waits. I'm going to get my PhD when I get an honorary degree. You know, you by constant practice, but so mostly by practice. So we'll go on. And bhava achieved by vaidhi sadhana, because you can have that mood, I'm worshiping God and I have to please God, and you're understanding how to do it. And of course you also become spontaneous in that way, but you're still in the conception of divinity. So the story of Narada in the Bhagavatam is very beautiful. I wish I could tell that's the whole story. It's one of my favorite Lila Katas, to speak about that story. A young boy doesn't know who his father was, and his mother is just keeping a little kind of ashram, and it's the rainy season in India, so these sadhus come to this holy place, and he gets their association, and he becomes so serious, and they see his seriousness, and they teach him the Bhagavatam. And then they leave and he's in complete separation. All he has is his mother. And then his mother gets bit by a snake and dies. And he doesn't have a father or mother. But he had that desire in the heart from their association, from that practice. And it describes. So then he followed what they said and he went traveling and wandered over the creation and then sat down and practiced what they said, and then God appeared to him. And he experienced bhava. And Raganuga sadhana, there's a story of a young girl. So you can see what happened with her. She went before the deity, and it just hit her in her heart. I want to serve Krishna as Radha served Krishna, as the gopis served Krishna. And I desire to dance with Krishna. And she just began dancing. And she danced and danced and danced and danced and danced and danced and danced all night in that mood. So that's bhava. Because one of the symptoms of bhava, you don't waste a minute in Krishna's service. So that happened from seeing the deity, and somehow it entered into the heart and it wasn't artificial. And it's going to be described here how when it is, can be artificial. I've seen that in Vrindavan. All of a sudden, somebody's rolling on the floor in ecstasy. And what are they thinking? Everyone's looking at me, how advanced I am. What everybody's actually thinking is, what a pretending fool. Okay, we're going to go fast on this. I in the book, everything is there. I just want to make sure we cover everything. Bhava achieved by mercy, by verbal blessings. Narada... Yeah, my God, by a great devotee, the blessings of a great devotee, by their words. So much can happen just by their words, just by their blessings. You know, I see that too. Sometimes I know some of my godbrothers that had some association with Prabhupada, and they weren't very advanced in Gyan and Vairagya, really. But somehow they pleased Prabhupada and took some risks and did some service. And he kind of blessed them. And then they wind up in Vrindavan for the rest of their lives. And blessings by appearing in the person, Krishna sometimes appears. And that's on 134. It describes how people in a, you know, kind of a tribal type thing, they kind of saw Krishna and... statement about by speaking, Lord Krishna said to Narada, O best of the Brahmins, I wish you may develop unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. I wish. And then darshan, and by heartfelt, unspoken blessings. You know what? One of my inspirations, I'll tell you a story. You know, I was in Vrindavan for so many years. I'm very attached to Vrindavan. And I was there about 15, 20 years as a student. So the government caught up with me. 15 years as a student, when are you going to graduate? So I got what's called a Quit India notice. And for me, that you might as well say, you know, you got 7 days left to live. I got a Quit India notice. So I went into Prabhupada's room, and I used to, and they used to put letters every day, a different letter and the date. So I was actually kind of like, you know, praying, Prabhupada, what do you want now? And I read the letter. And the letter was so interesting. The letter was to the person who was running New York at the time, and Prabhupada said, New York is favored by me because I started the movement here. He said, I wish all New Yorkers to Krishna consciously advance. Don't underestimate the blessings of a pure devotee. So, and example of Prahlad is so beautiful because he was in the womb of his mother and they took shelter of the ashram of Narada Muni. He was the son of a demon, Aranyakashipu. But Narada was teaching the mother the Bhagavatam and, you know, really just prayed for the child in the womb. And he became, by those unspoken blessings, and same thing, the story of Magari the hunter, it's a famous story, you could read that. Let's go, we're going. And now, these are the symptoms of bhava. And what's made is, you know, there are symptoms like, you know, crying, and their hair standing on end, and body shaking. And what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, those can be easily imitated for ego. This term is sahajya. Sahajya means easily born. When your tears and everything come easily born, they're kind of imitative. It too easily, or you're dancing, it too easily. Of course, we are enthusiastic about certain things. But these are the nine reliable symptoms of what is really someone who has this love in their heart. And avyakta kalitam, utilization of time, constant engagement, devotional service, 24 hours a day. When I was first came to Vrindavan, the only place they could put us is in the guest house. There was nothing else there. There was no ashram. So the room I was staying, and I even then I would wake up very early in the morning, and I looked out my window like 2 or 3 in the morning, and I can look under top of Prabhupada's house, and Prabhupada was already sitting there with his Bhagavatam with 16 commentaries. You know, Prabhupada had a Bhagavatam with 16 commentaries, and he would read them, and then on the verse that he was doing, then he would speak into his dictaphone. So his schedule was amazing because Prabhupada only took 2-3 hours of sleep and he was engaged all day long. And it was unbelievable because managing a worldwide movement, if you see some of the early videos of the Hare Krishna movement, remember when we first saw those, Saibel? And who Prabhupada was training to lead the movement? Yeah, it's just unbelievable who was coming, you know? And he was managing, and it had to be so detached and so many headaches and answering letters and, you know, everything all day. Also, the guru of Srila Prabhupada's guru was named Bhaktivinod Thakur. He had 11 children, and he was a magistrate. And if you look at his schedule, he would sleep from 10 to 12, and then from 12 to 2, he would write, and then from this to that, and then go to the courts and back, and, you know, every minute. So utilization of time in Krishna's service. Then Shanti is perseverant. And if you read in the Nectar of Devotion, I'll send in our Facebook page some recommended daily readings or something that are really... It describes these qualities, and it describes remaining tolerant even amidst disturbance. Marge Prickett got cursed to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird. And he just sat down and was just undisturbed. He wasn't drinking. He wasn't eating. He wasn't looking for miracle cures. He went, I don't want to die. Whatever. He just kept on hearing. Perseverance. When you have that feeling in your heart, you're not so easily disturbed. This is virakti, detachment. It's detachment means indifference. Not that I just stay aloof, but I don't have attraction for any objects of sense gratification. And there's a famous verse, Distyajam Darasutam, that Maharaj Bharat, he was a king, and he gave up everything so easily as someone after they go to the bathroom. As easily as that, he gave up everything, even though he was a king. Next, pridelessness, to feel humble, even though one is extremely elevated, not proud of your position. Even Prabhupada, when he did so much, and sometimes, someone say to Prabhupada, you're such a great devotee. He said, no, devotee is not an easy thing. Or someone said, I'm a devotee. He said, no, I'm not a devotee. Just that humility, despite reasons to be proud. And Prabhupada tells the story of one rich person called Lal Babu. He was one of the richest men in Calcutta. And there's a famous story about him. He was very elevated from previous life, but he was doing his karma, his thing in the world. And then a sweeper lady came. She's sweeping the street, and she said, time is passing, move on. And he heard that as the essence of the Bhagavatam. And he gave up everything. And then he went to Vrindavan. Those of you who are there, we can visit the temple. It's the pride of the Bengalis there. It's called the Lal Babu Mandir. And he would live in a hut in the garden of that thing. It was also, does anybody ever met Sadhu Maharaj? Yeah. Sadhu Maharaj, I met him about 35 years ago. He was just like a businessman or something. He came and came to my room in Vrindavan, invited me to his temple. He has a temple there for prasadam, and I met him back then. And he showed me a picture. He was a king. And he showed me a picture that kind of stuck in my mind. His grandfather, who is the king, was also a member of parliament. And he would chant 64 rounds every day before he entered into parliament. And there's a picture before him in parliament before his relief Rolls Royce. It's not just a Rolls Royce, but it has like, he's there. But when he would come to Vrindavan, he would only eat madhukari. Madhukari is you don't cook, you just go to house and you beg. Anybody want to visit me in Vrindavan? We'll do madhukari. Has anybody ever done that with me? Oh, well, that's great. I know where to go. You go, Radhe, Radhe, and they throw you future potties. They give you little subji, little vegetables. Yeah, we'll go. Madhukari. Anybody want to come? We'll do madhukari. So he did madhukari. He just begged. He just begged. And Ashabanda, hope against hope. This literally means asa, hope, banda. My hope cannot be bound. And why is it hope against hope? Because you feel that you're completely unqualified, but at the same time, you have such faith in Krishna's mercy that you think you can actually get something. So Prabhupada translated as hope against hope. My hope can't be bound. And that is so nicely illustrated when Prabhupada came to America and he wrote this poem as he's entering the shore of America. It's very dynamic. Prabhupada's on the East Coast. He's facing the whole material civilization. And he's there and he has $40, plastic white shoes, and a few books, nothing. And he writes this beautiful poem, about Krishna, that I'm a beggar. He said, you're insignificant beggar. And he said, but you make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. So Asabanda, he looked and he said, how am I going to do this? How will I deliver the people? They're filled with passion and ignorance. But then he started to quote the Bhagavatam. Shrinvita sva kata krishna punya shravana kirtana hidyantisto yabhajani vidanoti sarit nashta prayeshu. How the process of devotional service. So someone has this hope. I will. But they don't think they have any qualification. But they have so much faith. Samut kanta, intense eagerness to achieve pure loving service. And this eagerness is the main qualification to get bhakti. It's the price you have to pay. And what we're doing is we're following the practices and the things to increase our desire. Spiritual life is desire. Right now our desires are mixed. So we want to increase our devotional desires by the process of chanting and hearing. Constant attraction to chanting Hare Krishna. When I was in Vrindavan, I used to visit Prabhupada's godbrother called Akinchana Krishna Das Babaji. Prabhupada said he was Niskinchana or Paramahamsa, and he would only chant Hare Krishna. He wouldn't say anything else. Hey Krishna, hey Krishna, Krishna Krishna, hey Ram, hey Ram, Ram, hey Krishna. I remember I used to take kirtan parties. We used to visit him where he was. It was one of Radhanath Swami's main influences. When Radhanath Swami was sick, he lived in Imlital, and this saint was there. And I'll just tell you my favorite story with him. And I was there. We went by kirtan. We visited him. And I heard, hey, Krishna, hey, Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Krishna, hey, Krishna, 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 Hare Ram. And they asked him a question. He would only answer a question with a verse from the Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. He would only answer a question with a verse from the Bhagavatam. So one day what we did is somehow we gave him a biography of Prabhupada when it came out of Prabhupada Lilamrita. So then the next week we visited him. We kind of said, did you read it? We never knew he spoke English. But he was actually, before he came, he was very dapper and British culture. He said, yes, it was wonderful. And then we asked him, we said, it was wonderful. Then we asked him, then he said, when your Guru Maharaj took sannyas, I was there. And when you've a formal monk, Prabhupada took it when he was 58 or something. And I used to sponsor a festival at the place where Prabhupada took sannyas with the people who did the yajna. And it was really an incredible festival. I'm meditating on that place there because the place where Prabhupada took sannyas, I used to visit all the time. And he said, when your guru took sannyas, I was there. And he said, you know what I was doing? And we went, yes, because he was chanting. And then he tells this story. When Prabhupada took sannyas, it's a great story. I'll tell it. Prabhupada didn't want to take sannyas. His leela was he was reluctant because, the austerities involved. And then his godbrother came to see him. and kind of said, no, you must do this for preaching movements, something like this. And the God brother came with this old man. He was in his 90s. And Prabhupada said, well, I'll take sannyas if he takes sannyas. I said, okay. But it's not just you're old, you take it. So they arranged the ceremony, and there was only a few people there. And I knew a lot of them there, including Seshayi Brahmachari, who Bibi Govinda Swami said was the ultimate blues singer. You have to hear this guy sing. Ooh. And then, so he tells the story, when you do the fire yajna, when you're chanting the mantras, then the kirtan stops. And then when the priest is drawing everything and doing so many things, then you have the kirtan go. So he tells the story that the priest was doing the yajna, right? And the kirtan was going on, and then he was going to chant the mantras and do the thing. So he said like this. He said, so the priest went like this, stopped the kirtan. And he said, Prabhupada looked around and went like this. And then this Krishnadas Babaji said, he said, and then I knew he would be the leader of the Hare Krishna movement. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare Krishna. And I used to visit his foremost disciple, who was the same. I try to give him money sometime. One time, I'll tell the story, I'm in the mood. So I used to see him, and I actually had tapes of him, because Krishnadas Babaji and Sanat, they knew thousands of mantras on the drums. Next class, I'll bring you a tape of Krishnadas Babaji singing. It's unbelievable. And I had the Sanat, I wonder what happened to that. You have the Sanatan Das one?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to get that, because I taped his foremost disciple. And then what happened was, so I wanted to give him a donation, but he wouldn't accept the donation. So I kind of pried his door open and I threw the money in. And he was an old man, and then he kind of came out of the room like this, ran after me and threw the money. I got so scared, I didn't visit him for a year. Okay. But hey, Krishna, hey, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Same thing, only chanting. And the taste is there. And chanting is not just chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. It's speaking about Krishna. Prabhupada was constantly talking, morning walks, class, devotees, writing. This is all kirtan. And then addiction to glorifying Krishna's pastimes. Your level of bhakti is exactly equal to your desire to chant and hear about Krishna. And love for living in the Lord's dham. You know, you really, really get attracted to the holy dhams, Vrindavan, Mayapur, Puri. At least we got Bhava on the last one, right? We got to get the other ones, Saibel. Okay, let's go on. Ecstatic symptoms in neophytes. Sometimes what can happen is, you know, to have real bhakti, you have to have a pure heart. If you want to have bhava, you don't desire liberation, you're not even trying to be free from suffering. You know, it's not about you, it's about Krishna. And you don't have material desires. It's a very complex section I wrote something on in my book, in Nectar of Devotion. The terminology is difficult to understand, but basically what happens is, I wrote something, it somehow didn't come out here. But what happens is sometimes a person with a material desire will take to devotion, but his heart is not pure. So he won't get the real thing, but because he's practicing, rati means bhava. And in this sandhi, it becomes ratya. But this is rati, and bhava means the same. Abhas means like like the dawn. It's not the full sun. So something may be reflected, and then this means that someone may be curious, like they'll come to Vrindavan on Janmashtami, or there's a big festival, and they'll just start dancing because everyone else is dancing. And then they'll be with great devotees, and some of their bhava could reflect in their hearts, and they can have feelings just like that, just in the association of devotees. Anyway, let's go on. I'll just say very briefly on this. You can have bhava, but you know, when you associate with people who are advanced, then your devotion will go up. And if you commit offenses to devotees, then it could go down. And that's also described in Nectar of Devotion. I don't feel like discussing this too much here. Go on. And, you know, when someone has this bhava, you know, you may see things in them, but the examples on the full moon, there may be some spots, but the illumination cannot be checked. So a little fault in the midst of volume of devotional service is not to be counted as a fault. Go on. And now we'll do prem. I'll do that definition. We're going to end exactly on time today, too. So, okay, when that bhava softens the heart completely, again, this is softened, swanto, samyam, completely the heart, and endowed with a great feeling of possessiveness. My Lord, my son, my friend. It's a possessiveness. That's called mamata. Mamata means an incredible sense of this relationship. And the prime thing is, it becomes condensed, sandratma. So this is the primary thing. That love, it just becomes so condensed. And the example is actually given of Bhishma Dev. We studied in the Bhagavatam. That person who fought in so many battles and spoke on so many subjects, he just fixed his mind on Krishna. And there's nothing else in the consciousness. There's not even a conception of anything outside. It's so, and sundra means like steel. You can't put a pin through it. So nothing else can enter that intensity of love in your heart, and that the heart softens. Your desire to meet, your desire to serve, your desire for that relation, it just becomes so intense. And it becomes such a personal thing. It is my Krishna. My Krishna. It's the yes. Let's go. We'll just... Achieving prema by practice. This is one of my favorite verses. Megan, you know this? What is it? Evam vrata, supriya nama krita, chitanu raga. In this way, evam vrata, making a determination without attachment, in inhibition, to develop Krishna consciousness. Evam vrata, supriya, you're chanting supriya nam, the name of God whom you love, the name of the person whom you love, chitanu raga. Then your heart becomes softened and you chant and dance like a madman and you cry and sometimes you're without caring for any outsider, you're so absorbed. So how do you do this? This is by practice. And we'll go on. By mercy. If you look this up, I may have written the wrong number. Let me just see that. This should be 11, 12, 7. That this is an example by Prema, and if you go with the verses before that, it describes every species of life. Hanuman, the monkey, you know, Gajendra, the elephant. It just goes on and on and on. How sometimes by mercy, people get the highest thing. By the association with my devotees, somehow or other, just by that association, they achieved. Okay, I'm going to stop now. Are there any questions? Yeah.
I've heard many devotees quote Prabhupada as saying that he said that if you follow the four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds every day, I will personally take you back.
Yeah.
So does that mean that one may not ever even in one's lifetime get to the level of praying, and yet somehow Prabhupada will bring us back to the work of Vrindavan?
This is hermeneutics. And hermeneutics means to study the Shastra and study the statements. You know, you have to say all the statements that Prabhupada said. Prabhupada told Pradyumna, who was Prabhupada's Sanskrit scholar, he told Pradyumna, he said, you know, there was one thing I deceived my disciples. Pradyumna said, what is that? He said, I said that bhakti was easy.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't underestimate the mercy of Prabhupada, but in the Nectar of Devotion, it says no one can come to devotional service without some previous connection with it. So, but even if one has no connection, by the mercy of the pure devotee. So it's a combination of both, you know, and you have to understand how the acharyas speak. He's speaking in a context. He's saying, you know, what the mercy of a devotee is, you know. And then when they say that, it can happen. They say it very strong, and then they say, it can happen, but not in every circumstance. Satyuri, last question.
I was wondering, like, there's like a relationship between perfecting your sadhana and the grace of the guru. And I was always under the impression that it was like the grace of the guru, not the perfection of your sadhana.
You know, what sadhana is an expression of your need and dependence on Krishna. So it's not that it's just the activities that will give the perfection. It's the consciousness that will give the perfection. So it's not you do nothing and then, you know, it's all mercy. So why we can even practice? If it's all mercy, why do anything? Because it may come, it may not come. But it's just like the story of Radhanath Swami, who he was with the great saint Ramesh Baba. And they were on that Mankutir, and there were pythons and tigers and dacoits, and they were sleeping outside. And Radhanath Swami, we're going to sleep outside, you know, dacoits. Yeah, Krishna will protect you. So when they woke up in the morning, Radhanath Swami saw he had a little stick by his side. So he said, wait a second, you said that Krishna will protect us. Yeah, he said, we have to do our part. Okay, now what I'm going to do, have questionnaires so we can fill them out. And as I've sometimes gone over, if you finish earlier, that's okay too. And basically, either I asked questions or I asked you to, like, rate things from 1 to 5. And, you know, there's many, many questions. Just because I'm the teacher here, you don't have to say great, 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 great. You may give some input. Some things you like, some things you didn't like as much. And I'm thinking of 2 things, and you'll see if you like it. I'm thinking of continuing once a month just to keep the Sangha together. And, you know, do something, and also in July, August, and September, if you can come. And that's one thing I'm suggesting, that I can continue that Nectar of Devotion, and it can be more the pastimes of Krishna, and this, you know, and the philosophy of that, and the, you know, and I, because I've studied that subject too. And then thinking next spring, you know, maybe a 4-class or a 6-class. I was thinking of a book called Nectar of Instruction, Upadeshamrita. And I have three commentaries on it, and it's one of the most interesting things because it's 12 verses that cover the whole Krishna consciousness. You know, and it starts off with, you know, what's the quality of someone who's advanced? Vajravega, manasa, he controls the Vajravega, manasa, krodha, vegam, jiva. He controls the tongue, the you know, Vajravega, manasa, the mind, the anger. Then what are the six most favorable things of devotional service? What are the six things that destroy? And it goes all the way up until the highest thing. So maybe I can give a class that's by Rupa Goswami. So, or something else that you suggest, just if you like this, to keep this Sangha. I'd also like to keep the Facebook page active and put some things there. So hand them out and just hand them in. And if I put your name if you like, if you don't, but don't worry about it. If I thought the class wasn't good, I'd never give a question. I'm joking. As you like. So please just fill it out. I really appreciate it.